Examine the evidence. Instead of assuming that your negative thoughts are true, ask yourself, what's the evidence for this claim? What do the facts show? A musician named Emily was afraid of flying because she was convinced that the passengers would panic during the flight and that she'd be trampled to death in the aisle. She was aware that her fears sounded silly, but she was convinced that it might really happen. I asked Emily if there was any evidence for this belief. How many plane tramplings had she read about in the past year? She couldn't recall a single one. How about in the entire history of aviation? Once again, she confessed that she couldn't remember any plane tramplings. Of course, people can get trampled to death. It's rare, but not impossible. For example, people have died at professional soccer games and rock concerts when fans went out of control. But tramplings are not one of the more common hazards of air travel. Furthermore, more than 3 million people fly every day. When she thought about it, Emily had to admit that the likelihood of being trampled to death in a plane was vanishingly small, a fact she'd actually never considered. Suppose your fear of flying results from the belief that the plane may run into severe turbulence and crash. How would you use examine the evidence to challenge this belief? If you check the FAA website, you'll discover that the risk of being killed in an airplane crash is exceedingly small. For example, you'd have to fly every day for 22,000 years before you'd be at significant risk of dying in an accident. During 2004, not a single person died in a commercial flight in the United States, but more than 40,000 people died in automobile accidents. That's amazing when you consider the fact that there were more than 15 million commercial aircraft flights that year. The facts indicate that commercial air travel is far safer than driving, recreational boating, or even riding a bicycle. Examine the evidence can also be helpful for emotional reasoning. When you're upset, you may feel something so strongly that you think it has to be true. When you're anxious, you tell yourself, "I feel frightened, so I must really be in danger." When you're depressed, you may tell yourself, "I feel like a loser, so I must really be one," or, "I feel hopeless, so I must really be hopeless." Emotional reasoning can be very misleading because your feelings result from your thoughts, not from reality. If your thoughts are distorted, your feelings will be just as misleading as the distorted images you see in funhouse mirrors. Your feelings can fool you. Did you ever gamble in Las Vegas? Just as you put your quarter in the slot machine, you may have told yourself, "This is my lucky quarter. I just know I'm going to hit the $1 million jackpot. I can feel it in my bones." Then you pulled the handle and watched the dials spin with great anticipation. What happened? Did you hit the $1 million jackpot? That's what I mean when I say that your feelings don't always reflect the truth. Experimental technique. When you use the experimental technique, you do an actual experiment to test the validity of a negative thought or self-defeating belief, in much the same way that a scientist tests a theory to find out if it's valid. The experimental technique is the most powerful technique ever developed for the treatment of anxiety. You've seen several examples already. You saw how Trevor used a shame-attacking exercise to test his belief that women would be disgusted by his sweaty armpits. These experiments required courage, but the dividends were tremendous. The experimental technique requires some thoughtfulness, because everyone's fears are unique. The experiments you do will have to be tailored specifically to your negative thoughts. Terry was a happily married woman who'd suffered from severe depression and panic attacks for more than 10 years. Her panic attacks always developed when she noticed dizziness, chest pain, or tingling in her fingers. Then she'd tell herself that she was suffocating and about to die from a massive heart attack, and those thoughts would trigger intense feelings of panic. She had several full-blown panic attacks every week and was suffering intensely. Her scores on the depression and anxiety tests were off the charts. Terry had gone to doctor after doctor, including several cardiologists, but her heart and lungs always turned out to be perfectly normal. Each doctor reassured Terry that she was as healthy as an ox, but their reassurances would last only until her next panic attack a few days later. Then she'd tell herself, maybe this time it really is a heart attack. Eventually, one of the doctors made the diagnosis of panic disorder and referred Terry to a psychiatrist. Since then, she'd seen numerous psychiatrists who'd prescribed all kinds of pills, but nothing helped. She and her husband had four children and wanted to have a fifth, but Terry's psychiatrist told her she'd have to wean herself off all the drugs he'd prescribed first because they might cause birth defects. Terry was terrified about stopping the drugs, even though she knew they weren't helping her. Several days later, she spotted my book, Feeling Good, in her local bookstore, and noticed this wording on the cover: the clinically proven drug-free treatment for depression. She thought, maybe this doctor can help me, and she called my office to set up an appointment. Terry and I tried quite a few techniques that weren't effective. She was just as depressed and anxious as ever. During our fifth therapy session, I asked Terry if she'd allow me to induce a panic attack in the office so I could show her how to put the lie to her negative thoughts using the experimental technique. I explained that this method was far more powerful than the ones we'd tried so far, and I thought it was time to bring in the heavy artillery. Although Terry said this sounded like a wonderful idea, she failed to show up for her next two sessions. She called each week to say that she wasn't dropping out of therapy and really liked working with me, but was terrified by the idea of having an induced panic attack in my office, and wanted to know if we could try some less frightening method. I told Terry that, ultimately, she was the boss, and I'd never force her to do anything against her will, because her trust in me was absolutely crucial to our success. I explained that there were many other techniques we could use, but if she wanted to be cured, sooner or later, she'd have to face the monster she feared the most. I pointed out that she was having many panic attacks every week anyway. It might be worth it to have one more under my supervision, and we might be able to put an end to her problem for good. I reminded her that my office was near the emergency room, so help would be just a stone's throw away in case she needed it. Terry promised to think about it. A few days later, she called back and said she was absolutely terrified, but had decided to give it a try. I scheduled a double session so we'd have plenty of time to work together.